This is Indy's Giant 90.9, WBDG FM HD1, Indianapolis.
Another episode of Hash Marks and Hardwood. We're joined by head coach of the Giants baseball team, Coach Davis. Please welcome James Boyd. Joined by WBDG alum Jackson White. Joining us as a guest on today's episode, please welcome assistant coach of the Ben Davis boys basketball team, Coach Persing. Max Crosby gets shipped off to the Baltimore Ravens for two first-round picks, but then we hear a couple of days ago his trade is actually being resigned and that Max Crosby is actually heading back to the Raiders. Now we move on to the historic Tuesday night in the National Basketball Association, and Bam Adebayo dropping an historic second highest ever 83 points in NBA history. Good morning, beautiful people, and welcome back for the final time to Hash Marks and Hardwood on this Friday, May 15th, 2026. I'm your host, Bryson Hill, joined by my co-host, Nicholas Mountcastle. For the final time on a Friday, Nicholas, we've got Hash Marks and Hardwood. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing good, as always. Very excited that school's kind of coming to an end.
Indeed. Today is my last day of school ever until college, obviously. Then I get to go into the real world. But for now, we've got a great show for you guys lined up. Obviously, we mentioned our last show. Nicholas, we've had some great guests over the last couple of months of Hash Marks and Hardwood. Any guests to you that stick out right to the top?
James Boyd.
James Boyd. Got to be the GOAT, James Boyd. He's in this little compilation I put up of last show. I combined a bunch of stuff. But also earlier, yesterday I had a great conversation with Scott Agnes of Fieldhouse Files, Pacers and Fever reporter. I talked to him for about 21 minutes and 18 seconds. I'm going to play that next, and then after Scott Agnes is done, I'll come back on here. Me and Nicholas will come back on for the final time, play our last show remarks in the compilation. Again, Hash Marks and Hardwood, we'll get you kicked off. Here is Scott Agnes to kick off Hash Marks and Hardwood earlier this week. Good morning and welcome back to Hash Marks and Hardwood on, well, for me, this Thursday, May 14th, 2026, but for you guys, Friday, May 15th, 2026. On today's episode of Hash Marks and Hardwood, we have a special guest who we were supposed to have on last week, but we had some technical difficulties with the phone line and whatnot. From Fieldhouse Files, please welcome Scott Agnes. Good morning, Mr. Agnes. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Good morning.
Once again, I'm your host, Bryson Hill, joined by Scott Agnes with us, co-host Nicholas Mountcastle. Not here today, but Mr. Agnes, it's been quite busy in the Pacers and Fever realm the last couple of days.
Yeah, it really has. It's been nonstop type of news, right? When with the Pacers, it comes down to the odds not falling in their favor for the draft lottery. And now, not only do they not have a second-round pick, but they don't have a first-round pick. And after having a historically bad season, the worst record in franchise history. And then on the other side, the Fever just getting their season started a weekend and just capturing their first win of the year the other night in LA.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we'll touch on that because this is something that's a little different from last week when I was going to have you on. There wasn't a draft lottery yet last Friday, but obviously we know how the results have fallen. The Pacers, though, I'll put the Pacers in quotation marks here, fall to number 5, which obviously goes to the Los Angeles Clippers. What do you think is the biggest positive and negative, but mainly what is the biggest positive the Pacers can take from not keeping this pick?
I'd say the biggest positive is they're now, as part of the trade terms, their 2031 pick it stays with them, because if they made this draft selection this year, they would convey a pick in 2031 that is unprotected, meaning if they're number one, they're number three, or they're 30, it's going to the LA Clippers as part of the Zubats deal. So the positive thing is you keep a future pick, and now the Pacers control five of their next six first-round picks. The challenge in all this becomes they're on a win-now mentality right now, and so they really need help now. That's what the coach, that's what the president, that's what they're all talking about. And so it's hard to really think off into the distance 5 years from now when all they want to do is get back to the NBA Finals for the second time in 3 years.
Yeah, and I had this question written down for last week, but I still want to get your opinion on it. Obviously, that pick was protected 5 through 9. Obviously, the consensus was the Pacers would try to get an A.J. DeBanza, a Darren Peterson, or a Cam Boozer. If that pick would have fallen to 4, who do you think the Pacers would have selected, and who would you have liked for them to select?
Ooh, yeah, I mean, the next on the docket there is Wilson, Caleb Wilson out of UNC, and Acuff, a guard there. The other consideration could have been at that point, if your guy isn't on the board, what if you trade back a couple spots, or what if you make another maneuvering? The challenge becomes your current asset in one of the best drafts that evaluators have liked in years, and before the draft lottery system is about to change, and all these different things that are moving pieces in all this. This is the draft you'd want to select in. But I think of those, that group, if we're saying – that Peterson, DeBanza, and who's the third one? Boozer's off the board. You're probably going with Wilson. Caleb Wilson out of UNC gives you some size. But if not, you're good with Acuff right there. I'm a big believer in best player available. I don't get caught up in anymore the, you already have that, you have somebody in that role, or he's just not a perfect fit for this team. Okay, who has the biggest value long-term eventually? Who's going to be the best player? Who has starting or all-star or Hall of Fame potential? That's who I'm getting, whoever they believe that was.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like you said, they also could have traded back, but unfortunately, maybe in another reality, we're talking about who the Pacers would pick at number 4.
Exactly.
I feel like as well, obviously, if you've been on X and stuff as a basic fan, you know that Pacers fans obviously aren't too happy, but I feel like a big misconception, I don't know if this is how you feel, for me personally, it's not the end of the world. I saw a great tweet the other day. Obviously, I would love to have a top 4 pick, but I saw a great tweet that said the Pacers would be in a much worse position if they had Jay Huff as a starting center and a 5th overall pick, rather if they had Ivica Zubac and no 5th overall pick, rather. What kind of your positives on how Ivica Zubac, and was there any way, in your opinion, to get that Los Angeles, that Ben Mathurin and Zubac trade done without including the 5 through 9 protection?
No. If you listen to the Pacers, they said they were driven a hard bargain by the Clippers here, and that's what it became. Because my biggest challenge of all this is the protection in all these picks, whether we were talking about 2029 or the potential 2031 unprotected. I never want to do an unprotected possibility, because you never know what could happen, right? What if several of these star Pacers move on or whatever, and the cupboard's bare and you have a bad season and then you have nothing to show for it? Well, that turns out a different scenario playing out, but that's what's happening here right now. But yeah, for the most part, I totally agree with, for example, that opinion, right? In that this team badly needed a center. They went out and got him. And the reality, too, is you were utilizing pieces that weren't going to work out here necessarily. We still hadn't seen that pop out of your center in Isaiah Jackson, who you drafted 4 years ago. And you were just waiting to turn a corner, whether to prove he could be a starter or at least like your number one backup. And he hadn't quite gotten there yet. You still owed him $7 million per year. So you got that off the books. Benedict Mathurin is a free agent coming up July 1. And so he does not have that same value, obviously, if you wait until the trade deadline. Now, you could still do maybe a a sign and trade or something here before the draft potentially to make that work. But that's so complicated because are we even sure Clippers have the money or want to bring him back here? So the other thing you're trying to take advantage of if you were the Pacers, Bryson, was to utilize Benedict Mathurin and his expiring contract because the Pacers are right at the salary cap. Any additional dollars basically now moving forward they spend, they have to pay, you know, two for one almost because they'll be in the luxury tax if they add any additional salary. So that's a negative. Now for Zubac, I mean, this is a player who provides a much different look than Pacer fans are used to because he's much more of a bigger, big body bruiser type center, right? Who can really rebound the basketball well. He can be an all NBA, you know, all defensive team type guy. And that's something they badly needed. We'll never forget what he did to the Pacers several years ago, Bryson, when he went off and got 30 points and 29 rebounds against them. So, the other positive we should mention from a financial part is he's under contract the next 2 years at a very good under market value for a center. About $7 million per year, less than Miles Turner. And I like where Zubac is better on that trajectory. So, you really do have to separate the Zubac thing versus giving up an incredible type pick after a horrible season. Because to me, they don't necessarily go hand in hand and all that. Zubac, I think, is going to do really well, but we haven't seen it yet. Didn't play with Tyrese this year. And in his five games he played, they didn't overlap with Pascal Siakam either.
I do have a question for you. With all the obvious Achilles injuries we've seen, obviously Jason Tatum coming back freakily fast, Dante DiVincenzo just tore his Achilles in the playoffs, hope he gets well, and obviously Dame tore his Achilles, and obviously Tyrese in Game 7. Was there any chance, if the Pacers had a good year this last year, if they made the playoffs, if they got to the first or second round, was there any chance, do you think, of Tyrese coming back?
No, and especially not after the All-Star break, because what I mean by that is he got shingles, and he's still dealing with shingles. So that entirely delayed his progress. That ultimately became a setback for his time because he had to focus on that. He's been trying 3, 4, 5 different kinds of medicines to get a handle of it. Let's take that out of the equation. It's still no. I still don't think so at all. They ruled him out. The focus is on the next season and in the big picture rather than trying to win a playoff game or two. This team wasn't good enough to win without him, and it wasn't just because he was out. It was because of the number of infrequent number of injuries that this team had, like back in November and December especially, when they had, you know, 8 and 9 guys on the injury report and 3 guys that had surgery. So that's not a good sign. I know fans were excited, but I think the best thing they did was last July provide an update on Tyrese having surgery, say he's doing well, but he's not playing this year. And so I think that was best case for everybody.
Yeah, and I think it's even hopeful as well, seeing how good Jason Tatum looks back, looks after a torn Achilles, or even seeing someone like Damian Lillard win a 3-point contest off of a torn Achilles, and knowing that Tyrese is going to have all this time. He had pretty much a full offseason. I mean, June through October last offseason, and now all the way till next season as well. Pretty much from October 2026 to October 2025 to October 2026, he's pretty much going to have that whole range as well. So I think it's hopeful. Last Pacers related question. When you look at this bench, I feel like they might be missing a go-to scorer. Do you expect the Pacers to make any sort of MLE free agency signing? And if so, who could that possibly be?
Yeah, I mean, your instincts are correct there, especially after losing Benedict Mathurin, right? A guy who could legitimately go off for 30 points per game. The challenge was just the consistency at which he would play and some on the defensive end and such. But that's exactly another reason you really wanted this draft pick, is you could have used that individual off the bench as a great scorer or facilitator and all that. Because for the most part, I think this roster is pretty much set. They don't have any major decisions they have to make or key guys as a free agent. They have set this team up to win this past year and then the next 2 years. And then after that, some contracts start to become up, starting with Pascal Siakam, and it's really much we'll see from there. But I don't have any names for you just yet because we got to have the draft first, and then we'll see who becomes available or who is available. And the other reality in all this is I think the best case scenario, Bryson, will be for the Pacers to make a trade. So it would unfortunately require them to offload somebody, and you know, maybe it's a future draft pick or something here to go get a player of value. Because like I said, with the salary cap limitations, they are right up against it and literally hundreds of thousands of dollars within the luxury tax. And once you're in there, it severely limits how you operate as a franchise. And so the best case scenario will be for this team to have its scouts target players that were underutilized, undervalued, underappreciated in their current situation and go out and add to them. But you're exactly right. They need to add a score.
Yeah. Well, with that being said, once again, Scott Agnes here on WBDG's Giant 90.9 here on Hashmarks and Hardwood. We'll move a bit out of the Pacers' direction and talk about the team that just started their season this past Saturday. I know you were there when they were in training camp and whatnot. What really stood out to you about the Indiana Fever, and specifically last Saturday in their not just home opener, but their season opener against the Dallas Wings, where they lose a clutch game there, 107-104. What were your biggest takeaways from the training camp and Saturday's three-point loss?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, how much they spent on defense. They recognize this team has enough scoring, unlike the Pacers, right? And they can come from a number of different ways, whether it's, you know, Caitlin Clark or Kelsey Mitchell on the perimeter, or Leah Boston inside, and then scoring off the bench. And so much of the focus is on defense. You can't defend like that in that game in the opener, right, where you give up 100 points. You're not going to win many games doing that. Last year, the Fever, when they scored 100 points, they weren't giving it up also. And so they went 13-0 when scoring 100 points last year. So I'd say it's defense. I would say it's their continuity. Most of the team, the core pieces is back. They were able to re-sign Kelsey Mitchell, Lexi Hall, Sophie Cunningham. Remember, the collective bargaining agreement was up before this season, and that was what the offseason conversation centered around. And as a result, most players had tied their contracts to it. They wanted to take full advantage of a new CBA, and rightfully so, because salaries were like 6x what they used to. And now the minimum in the league is higher than the maximum of the league was last year. Yeah, say that again. The minimum of the league this year is higher than the maximum was last year. And so that's a key attribute to this WNBA league as a whole. But there are going to be some growing pains for this group, especially early on, mainly because players were limited somewhat in training camp. And we're talking 4, 5, 6 different players due to just injuries and precautions. But this team's going to be really talented. And the other probably big takeaway to me, Bryson, was how quickly rookie Raven Johnson had become a player favorite and just welcomed been welcomed so well here within the Fever franchise and ready to take advantage of this situation.
Yeah, I agree with that. That last comment, especially about Johnson. She, you know, some rookies, as we know, obviously get a little startled, aren't as comfortable, but man, she looks right at home at Gainbridge Fieldhouse with her Fever teammates. Mm-hmm. And I do want to talk about this too. We mentioned how talented and how good this Fever team is. Obviously, they make it to the semifinals last year with a ton of injuries, notably no Caitlin Clark. They were one win away from a WNBA Finals. When we look at this team, Scott Agnes, what would you say realistically, on a scale of 1 to 10, is the chance for the Indiana Fever to win the championship? And also, I mentioned how CC was out last year. On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is her health for the Fever this year?
Yeah, so I think the team is in the championship conversation. I would not call them a contender just yet because it's early and we need to see a lot more and they need to improve a ton. But I'd probably put it about a 7 on your scale. And in terms of her health, yeah, it's a 10. It's got to be. She's the face of the league, face of the franchise. She's the reason all that money I referenced earlier has entered the WNBA, and that's a result, too, of all the eyeballs that have come with Caitlin from Iowa and the college game here to the pro game. And so, yeah, even if she's not 100% this team will have some success, but to really have that championship and to be the big threat. Look, there's other teams that upgraded their rosters significantly. There's Vegas that we're going to get a glimpse of here soon. New York, always a challenge, especially when they're healthy as well. But you need Clark to be at full strength and at her best, and she really is. Yes, she's dealing with some back issues some people are concerned with, but no, she's good. I think it's more of a reflection of kind of like you were talking about Tyrese having a long layoff. Caitlin, until the last week, had not played more than 30 minutes in a game in 10 months. She hadn't played in a WNB game in 10 months. And so there's that game rhythm, game shape, body, you know, getting comfortable with its surroundings, environment, and what it's being asked to do versus she had that great run with Team USA a month or two ago. But she was playing 15, 18 minutes, right? Short stints for that World Cup qualifying team off the bench and was still named MVP. So she's going to be all right. And I think this team will be even better here in another month when once they're much, much more on the same page and can figure out even better what they're doing on the defensive end.
Absolutely. And final question for you, because I know you got to get going here soon. For you, obviously, there has been quite a lot of interesting storylines to report about and write about. For you so far, what do you think, as long as you've been doing this, is the most intriguing or interesting storyline or event that's ever happened that you've had to report on?
Yeah, I can take one from each team, and it's pretty relatively new. And I would say it starts with Caitlin Clark and how the Fever were able to draft her and how she completely upended the WNBA in a good way and made it relevant, made it profitable, made it successful, made it popular, made it something boys and girls were excited about. And friends of mine, Bryce, and I can't tell you how many of mine are not only texting me in game, they're doing the typical criticisms like it's a Colts game, like it's a Pacer game. It has broken through the barrier of individuals who maybe never gave it a chance or never wanted to watch women's basketball, and now they're analyzing it or discussing coaching moves and all those things. I think that's significant, and it's all started because of what Caitlin Clark did. And then how do I not go with this past year with the NBA Finals, right? Covering that for the first time for me, the franchise going to its second NBA Finals in league history. And if not for that Tyrese injury, we all that were right there at Paycom Center in Oklahoma City believed Pacers were going to get it done the way Tyrese and that Pacers group had started that first quarter.
Absolutely. I think everyone, not even just in Paycom Center, I think if you're an Indiana Pacer fan, you will die on the hill that if Tyrese does not tear his Achilles, that the Pacers are sitting here right now with their first ever franchise championship.
Yeah, and what a disappointment I feel for Pacer fans, because you go from one extreme to the other, right? Basically two quarters away, because they let it halftime, if you remember. Two quarters away from getting it done to now winning just 19 games, the worst, fewest in franchise history. And to go back to how we started this conversation, now you have no lottery pick to show for it. I think that, more than anything, is what makes how Sunday's results played out the most frustrating and most difficult, I think, for Pacer fans. They just got no reward for getting through this past season.
Yeah, we touched on it earlier, too. I mean, this team, I don't know how much you remember. I mean, I was there, so I remember it pretty well. But the season opener against the Thunder, that game went to overtime, and that game was fairly close. But you also have to look, that is a world where you have a healthy Benedict Mathurin on your team. You have a healthy Obi Toppin, a healthy Andrew Nembhard, a healthy Aaron Nesmith. Like, I think the team could have contended with is what it is. But once again, we know you have to go here, Mr. Agnes. So thank you so much for joining Hash Marks and Hardwood. I really appreciate for you to take the time here.
Yeah, absolutely. Glad to do it and keep doing what you're doing. I love high school radio and think it is invaluable to what you want to get it done. So I love it.
Thank you very much. All right. Once again, Scott Agnes here on Hash Marks and Hardwood. I'll send it back to the studio. And to the studio it goes. Welcome back to Hash Marks and Hardwood. I'm your host, Bryson Hill, on our final episode of Hash Marks and Hardwood on this Friday, May 15th, 2026. It's currently raining out, I guess. According to my phone, it is raining. Obviously, no windows here in the studio, so cannot confirm or deny that, but it's supposed to get pretty warm up to about the 70s later on in the day. Oh, so hopefully everyone stays dry from this supposed rain. Nicholas, we have one more little compilation here with almost every guest that's been on Hash Marks and Hardwood. Got a couple missing, but I'll come back on after this second pre-recorded segment plays, and we'll say our final goodbyes. Before that, favorite off the top of your head, because I know we've talked about a lot of stuff here on Hash Marks and Hardwood, favorite topic that you think was most interesting to you? I know you obviously mentioned James Boyd was your best guest. Any takeaways from that conversation?
Just learned a lot that, you know, normally you don't really think about.
Yeah, fair enough.
Day, fair especially enough. When it was close to the Super Bowl and all that.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, that was Super Bowl time. Yeah, man, so many guests, you kind of lose track of dates. All right, anyways, though, we'll be back after this last compilation, the final Hash Marks and Hardwood episode. I believe this kicks off with James Boyd, in fact. But if it doesn't, apologize, because I just put this together like an hour ago. But I believe it kicks off with James Boyd. So here is a compilation of some shows all throughout ever since January in the beginning of this show. We'll be back with you after this 18-minute pre-recorded segment. And the only reason I say this, too, is, man, superstar trades were so, like, you know, you traded him, you got everything back. But that kind of traded, like Nicholas mentions, that kind of changes when a guy like Luka Doncic gets traded for one first-round pick and Anthony Davis, who's not even on your team anymore. And to be fair, Max Christie's a good role player, but he's not Luka Doncic. So that's kind of...
analysis?
That's the kicker there. But, yeah, just interesting. And honestly, I think if Giannis switches teams away from the Bucks, I don't know about your guys' two opinions on this. I think Giannis in the future, if he's not a Milwaukee Buck, I think he'll either be a Miami Heat or New York Knicks. As much as it pains me to say that second one, I think he's either will be a Knicks or he will either be a Heat. There is kind of there's the chance just because it's LA, he could be a Laker. Just because always Lakers are always going to be in the hunt.
Yeah, after a Luka trade, can you tell a Lakers fan that they're not going to get the player they want?
And I don't really know. I wasn't too much into basketball in 2018, so I don't know how much they were in the hunt for, like, or how rumored they were rather for LeBron when his contract expired in Cleveland. But yeah, it's just interesting there. But let's get to the big one, James and Nicholas. I can't say last night because trade deadline was at 3. But yesterday, the Pacers traded away the 6th overall pick, 2022, I believe.
Yes.
2022, 6th overall pick. Benedict Mathurin, Isaiah Jackson, a 2029 first, and this upcoming first with a couple of protections, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, James, but I believe the whole pick is protected besides 5-9.
Exactly.
So basically, if you're the Pacers on lottery day or on lottery night, hoping not to see your pick be 5-9. But it's also interesting when you get a guy, they're sending Mathurin Jackson, the 2 first rounders, to the Los Angeles Clippers for Ivica Zubac and Kobe Brown. When you get a guy like Zubac, who is kind of, I know you guys mentioned earlier on the morning show as well, the Pacers have lacked a lot of physical presence recently, like a lot of physical mentality. And this is a guy who I'm not sure when the game was, but I've been seeing it all over the internet, who grabbed 29 boards against the Pacers. And the Pacers kind of lacked that mentality, that physicality, with obviously Miles Turner being at the... That's not a knock to Miles Turner, still a great player, but just not a physical beast like someone like Ivica Zubac. So I guess what I'm trying to get is, you're still trying to tank and look for an A.J. DiVanta or a Darren Peterson or a Cameron Boozer. But also, it's kind of hard to do when you bring in a really good center. So, James, what are just your thoughts on this trade as a whole?
Well, one, I'm looking at the three of us in this room, and I'm trying to see, you know, okay, if I play the 4, Nick can play the shooting guard, you can handle point guard duties. I think if the Pacers put us out there, we can get this tank done, you know, the right way. It's interesting, though, because morally, as a player, if you're Pascal Siakam and company and you go out there and you play, you don't play to lose. You don't play to put yourself in a position to – not win games. But the overall reason I think you make this trade with the protections that you have is that you really do want to land a top four pick. And to do that, right now, you're in that. I think they have the third worst overall record in the NBA. And you want to stay there or get worse as the season goes on. And how do you do that? You lose. And that, to me, is the difficult part. Because as a coach, Rick Carlisle, as a player, you want to send a big picture. But in the moment, you're like, wait a second. You know, we don't necessarily want to get better right now. We want to be terrible right now so we can get better for next season. So I'm very curious to see how it all plays out. But I understand why the move was made. Because although Zubats is a different center than Miles Turner, when Miles left, he still left a massive hole in your roster that you really didn't have, in my opinion, a good avenue in getting someone else to replace him if you did not make this type of trade. So, you know, I will say it's risky. I mean, everyone feels good about it right now, but if you get to those ping pong balls on Mother's Day and they don't bounce the right way and you lose that pick, which, I mean, I was on tankathon.com, which lets you simulate the lottery odds. Boy, I clicked that thing a few times, Nick and Bryson, and it did not go well for the Pacers. Every time I clicked it, it was the sixth or seventh pick, and I was like, no, like that's not what we want if you're a Pacers fan. So
no, not at all.
It's going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I was lucky enough to, you know, to I covered a lot of, like, track and field. I covered, when I first started in college, actually, I covered some women's basketball right off the bat and really enjoyed it. And you know, and that's kind of just how I started out. And, you know, sometimes those sports that you may not, you know, I really found out I loved covering track and field when I was doing it, you know, this is a long time ago, but I did a lot of it and found that, like, hey, there's so many different stories out here that aren't being told. You know, that's kind of the fun of high school too, is you don't, you know, if you don't tell the story, or if the student newspaper doesn't, you know, a lot of the stories just kind of go untold. So you might be the only one telling it, or, you know, you may find some good stuff just because people are, you know, no one else is really covering them. So, you know, you make connections with people, and then that leads to another story. So you're able to, I always say, like, there's more stuff to do than there is time in the day on the high school beat. I mean, you could basically work 24/7, you know, 365 days a year and not get everything. So that's good and bad. I mean, it keeps you working all the time, but there's an endless supply of good stories to write out there too.
Absolutely. And like you said, there's really, summer is the only time there's not something going on, you know, obviously sports world, high school wise, because, you know, we talk about the fall, you have all your fall sports, football, winter sports, basketball, and all that good stuff. Obviously, not like you said, we get into our spring sports, baseball, softball, track and field. It's really never an off season for you guys, but I am curious, is there a sport that is maybe your least favorite to write about, or maybe your favorite to write about? Maybe you're like, oh, I get to cover this sport, I can't wait to write all about it, or whatever the case may be. Is there a sport that you hate to write or love to write?
Oh, yeah. I mean, basketball, I think people probably know, is my favorite, I would say, or maybe people don't know, but most people I run into kind of, I think, maybe know that just because it's, you know, it's what I've done, maybe what I'm most known for, you know, and I think that maybe comes out in my writing, is that I love covering basketball and high school basketball specifically, especially this time of year. I mean, it's just, there's nothing better. And actually, I love, probably sectional week is probably my favorite week, but these other tournament games are, you know, they get bigger and bigger, and they're, you know, even better. Even the state finals, you know, sometimes the state finals is kind of like, you know, it might be a little bit of a letdown because it's in a bigger arena and it's maybe not packed, but man, we have had some dynamite. You know, the Ben Davis team that went undefeated, that felt like you're in a high school gym the way that place was jumping. It was awesome.
Yeah, we had,
you know, so we,
the IHSAA commissioner on earlier, Paul Knighty, and we talked about that great atmosphere, that 2023 state game. But
yeah, absolutely. And then we've had, you know, Jeffersonville Fishers last year was you know, just as awesome. You know, so we've had some great crowds for the, especially for the 4A, because you get a lot of people. You know, those schools are bigger. They bring, you know, the right schools, they bring bigger crowds, and then you kind of get the common fan interest too of just, you know, I want to see this game, you know, and that sort of thing. So, but yeah, and, you know, I would say basketball, and then, you know, I really do enjoy football too, because football is the start of the school year. It always kind of represents a new, a fresh start.
Our next hot take comes from Aaron McDuffie of the boys Giants basketball team here. Aaron McDuffie says, right now in college basketball, Darius Acuff is the best player.
Ooh,
we're getting into some hot take. I tried to list out these as the more we went down, the more hotter they got.
That is very hot, actually. Just trying to think. I mean, Acuff is great. Don't get me wrong. I mean, led Arkansas to an SEC championship, but no one really thought of them winning it. But, I mean, he did just sign a shoe deal with, I don't want to say who, I don't know who it was. So I don't want to say a shoe brand that I'm completely wrong about. But he signed with a brand yesterday. First time an athlete that's in college signed with a shoe brand. So that's insane. Nothing like we've heard. So that's going to open up a door for future college athletes to be having shoe deals. So kind of think the same skill level as Darius Acuff. And I saw the other day, Acuff has reminded me a lot of AI, Allen Iverson. Just the way he plays, his swagger. I mean, great player, but I don't think he's the best. I think you have some other guys like the Bansa. I think the Bansa is better. But guard-wise, I would say Acuff is the best. But, like, overall, I think the Bansa would be better than Acuff.
So you think Acuff is better than Darren Peterson, per se?
Hmm.
Or is that a... That's an interesting conversation to have.
I think Acuff is better than Peterson just because of the health aspect. I know people... not on to Peterson for skipping out of the games, but the reason he did was because he was having full-on body cramps. So I feel like Acuff, he's not really had those big health issues. He's been a great player for the full game. But people can argue that, okay, when Peterson plays, he's also a really good player, which is fair. But I'm going to take Acuff over Peterson just over the health aspect of Peterson.
Yeah, and that, I feel like people try to add that so much, oh, blah, 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 this doesn't matter, that doesn't matter. But unfortunately, when it does come to a player, whether it's the pros or NBA or whatever, you have to be healthy to be a good player. You know what I mean? You're not going to be good if you're never out on the court. So, Aaron McDuffie's hot take, man, that is, I'm going to have to say, invalid just for the reasons that you pretty much said, Ty. I think that if AJ DiBasta was not playing college ball right now, I think that hot take would probably be valid. Not to mention, there's the argument for Cam Boozer, like we already talked about, Darren Peterson. I mean, that's the consensus top three, right? It's Boozer, DiBasta, and Peterson. Where does Acuff fall after those? Does someone try to quote unquote reach on him, you think?
I could see it just because this draft class has a lot of good guards, from this college season. I mean, you got Peterson, you've got Wagler, and then you got Acuff. Three really good guards and three guards that are really good at making shots around. You have not seen a freshman class like this in ages, and the guards have been phenomenal. The bigs in this class has been outstanding. It would have been nice to see Caleb Wilson kind of build on to why he should be at least a top three pick, but he kind of got his season cut short, unfortunately, for the young kid. I mean, if he was still playing, this freshman class would have been really, really something else.
Yeah, and I think, how important is that? You mentioned those ladies going out and do whatever they do. I know Tatum and Paige play under the Indy Sirens. I know a lot of these girls do other local basketball stuff. How important, because obviously you can do a lot as as a coach as well. You can tell them where to go, what to do, how to be prepared. But how important is it for them to take the initiative and realize they need to get better through the offseason? And it is joining a team like a similar team to like the Sirens or something else, like a smaller or a travel team, whatever the case is.
Yeah, Leighton O'Connor's on the Sirens also, and almost all our players are doing something else right now. If they're not playing on another team, which is good. It's good to be under a, you know, they can have a different voice in their ears and, you know, reaffirming a lot of the things that we told them this year. And then, you know, if they're not on a team, then they're in a spring sport. And some of them are trying to do two at the same time. But they're doing things to improve themselves, and that's what's good to see.
Just trying to build that chemistry. Chemistry is very important. How do you think that'll play in? I know you just kind of touched it, but how do you think, you know, starting a lot of underclassmen? We've seen, you know, obviously a lot of these sports teams this year, Coach Davis, are very young. You know, you mentioned it last year. You start a lot of underclassmen. The girls basketball team this year had a lot of freshmen, three freshmen in the starting lineup. Even this current Giants basketball team has a lot of underclassmen too. And even we go back to the football team, yep. Gabe Kinnett, a freshman starting at quarterback, yep. A lot of youth. What are you looking for the underclassmen from last year? What are you really looking at how they can improve into next year? How can they, what are you looking to see the most?
You know, we expect those guys, now it's their time to step up. They start feeling the pressure. Now they have to be the guys. They're going to throw the big innings. They're going to take the important at-bats. They're going to do all these different things that they didn't have to do in the past. And maybe they had to do it and they just weren't ready. But now they should be accustomed to it, and now they're ready to go. We couldn't finish ball games last year. We talked about it all the time. We would start well, couldn't finish. And that's maybe some growing pains with being young, or maybe that's growing pains of just being inexperienced. But now the experience is there. They know what to expect. They know what the county tournament looks like. They know what playing in the mid-conference looks like. They know what our sectional looks like. We've been there. We experienced it. So now all those first and butterflies are out the way. This year we come in, and we're finding the older guys. Other teams, now they have to figure out what their young guys are going to do. And so now while they're trying to figure it out, we are expecting our guys to start to flip the script a little bit.
Greg, thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show today, fellas.
Yeah, so glad you were able to join us. Glad to have you. I've met you a couple of times. How's it going? Obviously, no basketball and football season anymore, but we know you're obviously a man of a bunch of crafts. How has kind of this spring window looked for you in the last couple of weeks?
So April, by my standards, is pretty laid back. It got busy again last week, and it gets crazy as of now. So I was doing the math on this yesterday. I think I will be on the play-by-play call for six different sports during the month of May. Obviously, locally, that means Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you know, picks up the pace. I'll be there next weekend for the Grand Prix, following weekend for qualifications, and then the following Saturday for the latest and greatest installment of the Indianapolis 500-mile race. But May for me is also the end of the college baseball season. I do a lot of conference tournament work for ESPN Plus, for the Horizon League, for the baseball and softball tournaments. I'll be up at Taylor for their national tournament postseason. I've got a little tennis coming up on Sunday. I've even got men's volleyball with Ball State and likely taking on Pepperdine tomorrow on ESPN Plus. So May is a potpourri of things, and a very busy one at that.
Yeah, so you mentioned you six different sports you could be on the call for. How do you even, like, how do you even know that much? How do you even get to know that much? Is it just spending hours on hours of studying each craft? Because I heard you were on the morning show earlier this morning, and you mentioned something about, I think you said you're calling men's volleyball this weekend, correct?
That is correct. So Ball State is ranked number 4 in the country. They are getting to host a round of the NCAA tournament for the first time since well before you guys were born. And because of the fact that they are having graduation weekend, this is a very common college graduation weekend, they could not play in Muncie. So they're going down to Noblesville and playing where the Boom play at Innovation Mile. and they were in need of a production company and a play-by-play guy, and I could help provide both of those. So I do call the boys' volleyball state finals for the IHSAA, but primarily it's women's volleyball. So I know volleyball, and everything translates. It's just going to be a little faster speed and a little taller, and the net's going to be a little higher when I'm there tomorrow night.
Welcome back to Hashmarks and Hardwood. Before I get all into all that stuff, Nicholas, I know you're in a time crunch and you have to go. Final episode of Hashmarks and Hardwood, last things to say.
It's been great being on the show. Definitely would listen to it on a regular basis.
Hey, hopefully next year we get someone to carry on the Hashmarks and Hardwood legacy. But you've been a great co-host. Thank you for joining me almost every Friday. We've had some mismatches here and there, but you've been on almost every single week, so thank you. And I know you got to catch the bus here, so
yep.
Thank you for joining. Once again,
no problem.
Nicholas on Hashmarks and Hardwood as he makes his farewell. I'm your host, Bryson Hill. That is a compilation of Hashmarks and Hardwood. I will get you guys, obviously this is the end of the show. Just want to give a couple of shout-outs here. First of all, to every guest on Hashmarks and Hardwood. I'll go down the line here. I had it written up. Actually, we're going to take a quick detour real quick. All right, sorry about that. I had to shut the door. Anyways, thank you to all these guests on Hashmarks and Hardwood. Coach Greg Person, John Easter, James Boyd, Jackson White, Isaiah Davis, Kyle Nedenrip, Tyler Stout with hot takes from Sherman Moss, Tatum Skibinski, Aaron McDuffie, Paige Jones. Obviously, thank you to the legendary coach Stan Benge, the legendary Greg Reichstraw, Kyle Nedenrip, again, Scott Agnes was our final show. Thank you to all those wonderful guests. Thank you to all the alum here last year that inspired me to do this show and inspired me to really push forward. Brody West, Miles Sprong, Tyler Stout, Jason Brown, Ashton Oldham, a great and elite group of guys that really inspired me to stay here and keep working hard. Obviously, I have to give a huge shout out to the man that is really behind it all, John Easter, giving me this wonderful opportunity for you guys to hear my voice on the airwaves, host great shows like these. I know I already thanked these guests, but again, thank you to every Hashmarks and Hardwood guest for being so cordial and professional with your willingness and your flexibility to join the show. Obviously, thank you to Nicholas Mountcastle for sitting along across from the big board with me pretty much all last half of the year, ever since January. With that being said, obviously, I couldn't go off the air without thanking my wonderful family and their sacrifices and really, one, convincing me to go into this program and then being able to drop me off at all these different sporting events and whatever the case may be. Obviously, I have to give a shout-out. I already did earlier, but my partner in crime this year, Sir Tyler Stout, without him, man, basketball season would have been entirely rough. But hopefully, this is not the last time you'll hear my voice on the airwaves. Also, shout out to Mr. Goins, who is retiring at the end of this year at BDTV. Gave me a great piece of advice when I was first here at WBDG about 2 years ago. But yeah, thank you for listening in for the final time. Hashmarks and Hardwood. I'm Bryson Hill. Goodbye.